Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Time, as I was saying, for our Friday gathering. I'm joined by political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail, Sarah McGuinness, Fine Gael TD for Dunleary, Barry Ward, Labour Senator Laura Harman, and Harry McGee, political correspondent with the Irish Times. Good morning, everybody. Is it still raining outside?
Drizzling.
All right. Let's start with facial recognition technology, if we can, please. Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan says that work on legislation to allow for facial recognition technology is well advanced and will be introduced during the lifetime of this government. And Gardaí have started to use body-worn cameras in recent months, but successive governments have stalled on the issue of facial recognition technology, which has been opposed by civil liberties groups and the Green Party in the previous government. Harry, you're covering this for the Irish Times today. The minister set out how the government are proposing to introduce this. What did he say?
Well, yeah, essentially he says that he does want to introduce it during the course of this government's term. And he said two things that were pertinent, Philip. The first thing was that there would be, it wouldn't be used live initially, not in the legislation that's been proposed. It would be used retrospectively. So if footage was analysed using FRT, it wouldn't be analysed live. It would be footage that was historical, one that was taken hours beforehand or even days beforehand.
So of more use in securing prosecutions after the fact than in actually enforcing the law at the moment.
Sure, it's kind of almost like a modern iteration of kind of Crime Call, where, you know, they show videos and people try to recognise suspects who have, you know, robbed a filling station or have been involved in some crime, or the infamous or the famous mugshot that was sent out in the wake of the Dublin riots in November 2023, where the public were asked to see if they could identify.
Okay,
any
but that's
of the
how it starts. It would then presumably evolve.
No, he does. There is a rider to it. It was in response to a parliamentary question that was put by Keane O'Callaghan. There is a rider to it, and the rider is that there might be provision in future to allow live facial recognition technology to be used in very specific cases, and that's when the, you know, the security of the state is under threat for terrorism cases or for live ongoing situations that have ramifications, i.e. terrorist attacks or else attacks that threaten national security or public safety. So there is provision for that, but he said he's not going to broach that in the legislation that he's going to be bringing before the Oireachtas in the coming months, I presume.
Barry Ward, has the government or have you any reservations about this at all? The Council of Civil Liberties has described FRT as highly intrusive and invasive technology that is faulty, unreliable and discriminatory and risks innocent people being misidentified.
And in some respects, they're right, but it's all about how it's used, the parameters that you put in place, the safeguards you put in place. And much of what the ICCL has said is based on experience with this technology in San Francisco, in Boston and in the UK. They're absolutely right that the technology can be unreliable when it comes to people of colour and women, because it is essentially designed by white men, and that can be problematic. But the big difference that I would always say that exists between police forces in the States and the UK and on Gorda Síochána is that on Gorda Síochána has the power to exercise discretion. So if a facial recognition technology product identifies Philip Boucher-Hayes in a particular piece of video and says, this is Philip Boucher-Hayes, the Garda who's looking at that still has to satisfy himself or herself that that is Philip. And then if a prosecution is to ensue, the DPP has to be satisfied, and ultimately a court and a judge or a jury. So there is a number of other hurdles.
But the potential for abuse along the way is really huge. I reported a story 5 years ago about a company called Clearview AI, which was one of the forerunners in this area of facial recognition technology, and how somebody in An Garda Síochána had used Clearview AI up to 50 times. But the commissioner's office said, no, nobody using it here. A very, very carefully worded statement saying, we have no relationship with that company. The commissioners didn't know what was going on within an Garda Síochána.
Well, there's two things to say. First of all, 5 years ago in AI terms is a lifetime. And so the technology is much more advanced than it was then. But that's not really
even
the point.
Even greater potential for abuse.
The real point is about the safeguards and who watches the watchers, as it were. That we have now a much, and built into the legislation, a much stronger code of conduct that has yet to be approved by the minister that will put in place. For example, you know as well, Philip, that Garda are not allowed to look up pulse for their own purposes. And so every time a guard looks at pulse, which is the Garda's system for recording individuals and facts in relation to individuals, they must be able to account for why they looked at it at that time. Things like that will be in place in relation to any use of FRT that weren't in place at the time because, as you say, the Commissioner didn't have a relationship with FRT at that time. Now there is a statutory basis for it. There will be a code of conduct. There will be a set of policies that allow the use of this technology under very limited circumstances and in particular ways that safeguard people against exactly that kind of abuse.
Laura Harman, the capacity for securing prosecutions, for preventing crime here is absolutely enormous. Aren't all of these misgivings from the likes of the Council for Civil Liberties and opposition parties really misplaced?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to be very cautious when it comes to this, and we need to be very, very careful in relation to it. And, you know, I think there has to be proper scrutiny, pre-legislative scrutiny at the Justice Committee, and we do need more public consultation and awareness in relation to it. I take very seriously the concerns of the Irish Council for Civil Liberties in relation to concerns they have around profiling in relation to women or other minorities. You know, and as Barry said himself, I mean, there are, I suppose, diversity issues, you know, within the Gardaí themselves. There will be a need for serious training in relation to this. We have a lack of guards in general in the country. That's a separate issue. This certainly won't be a panacea in terms of, you know, solving crime. But we do absolutely need to use technology. Of course we do. We have to be modern in terms of our policing, in terms of our security. But we need to make sure that it is done correctly. And there are other, I suppose, biometric databases in place at the minute in terms of DNA, in terms of, you know, fingerprints as well. And I think they need to be reviewed in terms of, you know, I suppose, how they're also, you know, operating. And also, I think there are questions about where are these images stored, where is this data stored, where is this database going to be centred. So look, it's an ongoing discussion. I think it's extremely important that we get it right and that there is more consultation and scrutiny.
Aren't these the wrong concerns in some respects? Because the Oireachtas has been told that this stuff only works in 19% of cases, that more often than not it throws back false leads and a huge amount of follow-up investigation for Gardaí to waste their time on.
I think a lot of what we're seeing, and I know the ICCL have concerns in relation to, I suppose, what are the quality of the video or the imaging, you know, that they're receiving or that they're, you know, querying. So that there are huge, I suppose, discrepancies that can be found. And I suppose there are examples in terms of the UK, in terms of the US, where people have been, you know, falsely convicted in these instances. So this is why I'm saying, you know, we need to really approach this with caution. We do need more consultation in relation to it. And certainly nothing can be railroaded through when it comes to this. We do need to be careful. Yeah. We do need to have up-to-date technology, but it needs to be done properly.
Sarah McGuinness, is this happening now because the Greens are no longer in government?
I do think this is another example of the benefit, I suppose, for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael going into government with the independents, because when the programme for government was being negotiated, I remember talking to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael backbenchers who spoke quite frankly and said, they're not going to look for much. The independents aren't going to look for much. They're not going to take huge moral stances. They'll want their little wins for their constituency. And those might cost in the short term, but in lots of respects, it will give Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael more power to do exactly what they want. So I think this is kind of particularly in the justice portfolio under Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil are doing exactly what they promised. And it's a more centre-right approach to what we would have seen under the Greens. So in short, yes, I think you're bang on. There's no kind of centre-left party in government to push against this.
OK.
Can I just make just in relation to FRT, I mean, every time you open up your iPhone, I mean, your face recognition technology is used. If you're using Instagram, you know, you see a photograph and something like 30 people in it, and every single one of them has been tagged. And I do take it that there are shortcomings to the technology, and really adequate safeguards have to be put in place. And to my mind, I mean, the questions are who uses it, what purpose, and what safeguards. So, for example, in 2018, Taylor Swift had a concert on in the Rose Bowl in the States, and she used FRT to identify known stalkers coming into the concert. Businesses in the States have used it to screen people coming into their stores.
Did it work?
I'm not sure if it worked or not, but even the use of that is should be absolutely and utterly outlawed. Like any technology, as Laura and Barry and Sarah have said, it can be a very useful tool, but you have to be very, very careful in terms of its application. I think technology has moved on, but I think the point in relation to people of colour and in relation to minorities and in relation to women has to be taken cognizance of if this legislation
that's
is going
because
to be rocked.
It learns by scraping images largely from social media, which tend to be of white people, and it hasn't really been developed to deal with racial minorities with the same level of accuracy. Barry, what was the point you were going to make Taylor Swift?
Well, no, I'm just saying there's no contemplation that it would be used by private entities like that. We are talking about the context of it being used by the guards, and Laura raised the issue of guarded numbers.
Come on, I mean, this technology can be sold to the highest bidder.
It can, but it can't be used in public by the highest bidder. And what we're talking about here is a situation.
Yes, but it
not
could
even
be
where
it could be used to deny people access to private premises.
Well, and there are, as you know, there are all kinds of rights in place for people that they can't be discriminated against on particular bases, and so it would have to be a clear and identifiable basis for doing that. So employers might or businesses might find themselves in terrible trouble. But the key thing about F4T is, and Laura mentioned the Garda numbers, which we're constantly ramping up and trying to improve. This is a key tool for reducing Garda man hours. It is like the search tool that you'd use in a Word document or PDF, but for video. And that's how it's going to work.
And on that, privacy solicitor Simon McGar has said, I'm going to quote him directly, it is akin to running a hotline where 99% of the tips turn out to be false, but every one of them has to be investigated. You're probably just going to end up burdening Gardaí more.
I don't agree. I don't agree with that figure either. But let's take, for example, the video footage that came back from the Dublin riots, shop footage, mobile phone footage, etc. You had highly trained, highly important and valuable police, Garda detectives sitting down for hours upon hours upon hours and watching footage. Are you seriously telling me that it wouldn't be quicker and more efficient to have a tool search out the bits of the video that they actually need to watch and satisfy themselves that that is X, Y, or Z person they're looking for? Or is it better to have them sitting there
for hours? Well, in that particular crowd, they would be searching hard to find people who weren't wearing scarves or masks over their faces.
But the F4T can get around that as well. The reality is that if they identify somebody because of the distance between their eyes or something like that, it's not really usable and it can be immediately be dismissed.
Now,
by a guard.
You of all people in the Dáil are not going to tell me that that is the kind of evidence that a half-decent barrister isn't going to make mincemeat of in the courts.
The point is that it identifies that person and a guard can then dismiss that as not being of evidential value. But it avoids the necessity for that guard to be sitting there for an hour or 30 hours looking at the footage and discarding it that way. It hones in on the bits that are important and they actually need to look at. But the important thing is, and Harry is saying it, the protocols, the parameters within which it can be used and the individual human interaction that says, I want to look at that more, or I don't need to look at that again, or that's of no use. That's where it really comes into its own, and that's what will make it workable or not workable.
Just kind of further to Barry's point, I actually don't know what the mood within An Garda Síochána is towards this, but Jim O'Callaghan also is under huge amounts of pressure within the force and within government to get Gardaí out from desks, and that was one of the first promises he made. So whether or not this will actually succeed in doing that, it's something to be seen to be getting more Gardaí out of admin and out of, you know, scrolling through hours of footage and freeing them up. So, you know, not saying that this will absolutely do that, because I agree with some of the I agree with the broad majority of the points you made earlier, but it's to be seen to be helping that cause.
Okay, and An Garda Síochána has said that they want her. Drew Harris said he's in favour of it, excuse me, as well. Let's move on, if we can, please, to this week's report on social and affordable housing delivery from the Department of Housing, confirming that the government has missed its social and affordable housing targets again. The target for new build social homes was missed by 18%, the overall delivery of social homes down 11% on last year. Sarah, are they embarrassed on the corridors of power when you talk to them about this?
No, it's kind of it kind of seems to be an example of just brazening it out, really.
For 10 years now, yes.
For 10 years and probably for the next 10 as well. But I suppose the Dáil hasn't been sitting this week. So the kind of these bouts of targets have come at a time where this data has come when there hasn't really been debate in the Dáil. Same with the revelation, if I'm correct, that the target of 40,000 homes was never going to be met. Because the Dáil has been so stop-start, there hasn't really been a proper hammering of Fianna Fáil in particular on this matter. But like this kind of brazen attitude, even the press release outlining these figures, it's misleading. As Sinn Féin housing spokesman Eoin Ó'Byrne has said, my colleague Craig Hughes did an analysis of these figures, and while, you know, the government has kind of hung its head and saying that the new bid social home targets was they missed that target of 9,300 homes by 1,400. They kind of boasted that affordable home supports were exceeded targets, but that's not necessarily true, because some of the homes that they're talking about through the First Home Scheme or the Help to Buy Scheme, those houses haven't actually been built. They're not even delivered yet, you know, and we all know that there are numerous examples whereby that can actually fall through. So these figures that they're kind of portraying, they're not even the whole story. And I think that the kind of rhetoric at the moment, and I think you can particularly see this with Micheál Martin, who has kind of become seen as this de facto housing minister, in that he seems to be telling James Brown, the actual housing minister, here's what's what. The kind of attitude when he's pressed on this is, we're getting there, we're getting there. And if you kind of say, he sat in this studio not too long ago and said to Claire Byrne, you know, we've turned a corner on housing. He was pressed on this at a doorstep just hours later, and he was going, no, I didn't say that. I mean, we're doing everything we can. It's just completely ploughing ahead, and he clearly has a vision for where he wants to get housing that involves Section 23 tax breaks, like we would have seen in the boom time for developers, and he's just going to keep going until he gets there, would be my read of the situation.
Laura Harman, in Labour, do you think that the appointment of NAMA boss, if it indeed goes ahead after Tuesday's cabinet meeting, of Brendan McDonagh as a housing czar, is going to make any difference?
I don't, to be honest. And look, I think it is extremely concerning where we're at in terms of housing. And I mean, I've said before when the Minister for Housing was in the Shannon questioning him that I don't have faith in this government in relation to housing. And I wish I did. I genuinely wish that I did. I mean, behind all of these figures, there are families that are struggling. There are people who are stuck in the rental sector that want to own their own homes. We have a ticking time bomb, I believe, in this country in relation to, we can't have a whole generation of pensioners renting in the future. It's not sustainable. It's a poverty ticking time bomb. We have the highest levels of youth outward emigration since 2015. We're losing guards. We spoke about guards. We're losing teachers, healthcare staff, you know, from this country. And I think housing is a key threat to our economy. And I think in terms of how the figures are presented, I mean, look, there's a difference between saying something's been purchased or approved. You know, they are, I think, manipulating the language and how they are presenting, you know, these figures. And I think the public, you know, are tired of it. They do want to see progress. And look, at the end of the day, we do need to see serious investment in housing, in infrastructure, you know, at a time, I suppose, where people are worried now in relation to the economy, in relation to tariffs. This is a time for investment in our skills strategy as well. And even the tenant in situ scheme, which, you know, helped 79 families, you know, prevented them from homelessness in Cork City, for example, last year. There are 33 families now at risk of homelessness because of a lack of commitment to investment in that scheme in Cork. So that's just one example. But look, it is deeply concerning. I mean, we saw the Taoiseach in the White House recently, who did laugh along, you know, in terms of when Trump, I think, joked about the housing crisis. And for me, that was, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of my confidence in this government, in terms of housing.
Harry McGee, new housing czar. Pick your cliche. New broom, window dressing or fall guy?
I how dare you presume that I would be using a cliche
to describe the new housing czar. I'm just offering you the fig leaf and I'll say that I prompted you into picking one.
I think he's going to be on a sticky wicket, to use another cliche. Philip, I think it's going to be a very difficult job for Brendan McDonagh to do. I listened to what Lurkin Sir had to say about him earlier on the programme this morning, and I'd agree, you know, that it's, with all the best intentions, it's going to be very difficult for him to transform the housing situation. And I mean, the reality is that the government have been going backwards in the past year. We had housing figures, overall new build figures for 2024 that were disappointing, to put it very mildly indeed. And the government essentially, government parties, misled the electorate in the run-up to the election in relation to the amount of houses that would be built. And now we have the same picture emerging with both social and affordable housing. And I mean, one of the things that has to be pointed out, and Sarah referred to it earlier on, is in relation to affordable housing. The way that they arrive at the overall figure, they include vacant property refurbishment grants in that, which is 1,344 units. They have nothing to do with affordable housing. And that bolsters the massive figure up above the target of 6,400 to above 7,000. And that, to my mind, is wrong. The other thing that sticks out for me is the abysmal record of the local authorities in relation to building social and affordable housing. No social housing built in Galway last year. No affordable housing built in either Galway City. Galway City for social housing, Galway City for affordable housing, and Cork City. No affordable housing built in Cork City either last year. And when you look at the figures for local authority cost rental homes that were produced in 2024, there were 30 in the entire country. That's one, less than one. There's just over one for the 26 counties, less than one for all 32 counties in the Republic of Ireland. The figures are really bad. The minister, in a statement, in fairness to him, said that he is going to try to urgently address the local authority issues. You talk about state housing on state land. The local authorities do need to get their act together. The Department of Housing needs to get its act together. And I think Brendan McDonagh has his work cut out over the next 3 or 4 years.
Barry Ward, the government has, in trying to solve its crisis, the Land Development Agency, the Housing Finance Agency, the Residential Tenancies Board, 520 approved housing bodies, on board Planola, Commission for the Regulation of Utilities, and so on and so on and so on, at its disposal. Why does it need a housing czar as well?
Well, I mean, it's not actually, as you say, there are so many different aspects of this. It's not for one person to solve this problem anyway, but bringing things together is really important. An example of that I always think of is Simon Harris, post-election, contacted every one of our elected reps around the country, councillors, TDs, etc., senators, MEPs, to identify locally where there might be blockages that his office
and I will
to.
Bet you now that not one single one of them said to him, what we really need, Simon Harris, is an extra layer of management.
I don't know what each of them said to them, but it's not an extra layer of management, but there is the notion that there is somebody.
I'm sorry, this is somebody who is going to sit between the minister and the heads of all of those agencies.
Somebody who can
draw
things together, which is not particularly is not going to hurt the situation in any event. But what I would say is
Hang on a second. No. Let's just deal with this step by step. Mm-hmm. It probably will end up hurting the situation because you are depriving the heads of those agencies of agency by meaning that they have to now refer up to their housing czar before taking action.
No, I don't agree with that at all. There is a single point of contact for them all, a place where they can bring their issues, mark their progress, etc., and that can be passed on. I don't see it as being something that's in any way going to hurt the situation. But the situation is something that it's obviously very difficult. Nobody's happy with the figures. But the figures also belie the amount of work that has been done. And the reality is two things. Firstly, housing delivery has increased enormously. Yes, these figures are disappointing. And that is a problem. Nobody's happy about that. But there's no disputing the fact that this is the number one priority for the government. But the other thing that's important, Philip, is looking at the pipeline of things that are coming through. And we know that there are...
Okay, and we've heard those rehearsed so many times before. We don't need to hear them again. I'm sorry, Barry.
Because statistics have been reeled out by everybody on this panel in relation to housing, some of which are helpful, some of which are not. It's not about statistics. It's about delivering homes for people, and that's what we're trying to do.
Is Brendan McDonagh's appointment, in fact, an implicit admission that the housing minister has stumbled a few times and needs some wiser assistance?
No. And that would be like saying that using approved housing bodies is to suggest that the department can't manage housing. I mean, that is not a reasonable thing to say at all. The notion that you would have somebody who can pull together the strings of the many agencies that you've mentioned who help constructing housing and providing homes for people, that is not a bad thing, and it's nothing to do with the minister. Okay. It's about having.
And do you think that Minister Brown is doing a good job?
Yeah, I've worked with James Brown. I was the Justice spokesperson in the Shannon in the last Oireachtas, and he was the junior minister in Justice. I found him to be somebody, above everything else, not bombastic, not somebody who's out there blowing his own trumpet, but somebody who listens when you come to him with an issue, somebody who deals with issues. He was incredibly effective in bringing gambling legislation through. And I think just because he's quiet and just because he isn't necessarily always out there doesn't mean he isn't doing a good job.
Sarah, is he doing a good job?
I don't want to defend James Brown, but I think there needs to be more scrutiny on the government, like Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael Moore as a whole. These figures we're talking about, they're before James Brown's time as housing minister. So there certainly needs to be focus on Darragh O'Brien and how he was running the department in the last Dáil term, how Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were supervising the running of that government. Like, it needs to go up to the top. It needs to go to Taoiseach Micheál Martin, because James Brown, he was considered when he was selected quite a wild card choice from an outsider's perspective. It kind of seemed like he was owed a promotion, but it wasn't really too sure where the Taoiseach was going to fit him in. And somehow he ended up in the housing brief. And really, you know, he's kind of been on the back foot since getting that job. He hasn't gotten one singular break, and whether he's doing enough to help himself at the moment is certainly up for debate. But I think that this really needs to go to the top of government in terms of level of scrutiny.
Has he, Harry, just been unlucky in not getting an even break, or is he a square peg in a round hole?
We just don't know. I mean, housing, you know, from the moment of conception, when you come up with a housing plan, you know, that plan won't be implemented for how many years? 4 years, 5 years, 6 years? So, I mean, he has only been minister for January. It's a very big, it's a very complex brief. Anyone who listened to Lurkin Sir this morning would have known all of the kind of the nuances and the complexities that are involved, the difficulties, the systemic difficulties that Lurkin Sir identified within the Department of Housing itself. And these are things that he is going to have to grapple with. So it's much too early to make a judgment on the performance of James Brown.
All right.
If you come back in a year's time, I will be able to give you a more considered view on how James Brown has performed in the role.
I want to move on here. I want to move on to the focus of the talk about a more secular system in our schools, removing the sacraments from the classroom in particular. Laura Harmon, are you comfortable that our national school children are receiving 2.5 hours of religious education a week and 3 hours of science, geography and history a week?
No, well, and look, I think our view in the Labour Party is that we need to move towards a more inclusive, secular, state-run education in this country. And I know the government, you know, themselves have a target of divesting 400 schools by 2030 in relation to this, but they're nowhere near meeting this target. I think faith formation can be done outside of the school. Certainly, subjects like religion, sociology, philosophy are extremely important. And I know our education spokesperson, Deputy Owen Kenny, you know, was a religion teacher himself and will testify, you know, how important it is. But, you know, faith formation can be done outside of the classroom. And I know the Archdiocese of Dublin themselves since 2022 have been starting changes in relation to this and actually recommending that parents play a larger role. And of course, there's nothing stopping families from sending, you know, their children to schools, you know, that are emphasising, I suppose, a Catholic
ethos, absolutely. Well, look, whatever public opinion is on this, Barry, the fact of the matter is that the boards of management and the principals of national schools all tend to be, by and large, quite happy with the existing arrangement. I know that the INTO has taken a different attitude on it, but might this be picking a fight that is just going to be incredibly costly and time-consuming?
Yes, and I don't think it's something that should be done centrally. I think this is a decision that should be made by school communities, parents, boards of management. It's not for Teachers Union or the Department of Education to make these decisions. Religious education in school is, I think, a matter for parents. It's not just Catholic ethos, by the way. There are lots of religions in schools. Obviously, there are Protestant, but there's also non-Christian religions in schools like that, and they need to be facilitated. And if the parents of the children sending them to those schools want that to be there, then it should be there, in my opinion.
But you can't be comfortable that amount of time is being devoted to religious education.
I don't think it's for me as a non-teacher and a non-education expert to sit in a studio and tell people how the school curriculum time-wise should be divided up. But I will say, as a parent of a child who's not in school yet, I mean, that is a decision for a parent to be made. And that's why I don't think, for example...
And you're a parent and I'm asking you what your decision is.
Well, I mean, I don't know yet because our child is only two, so we're not at that stage yet. But I think as well, education is something that it needs to be considered carefully. And religion and faith is not outside education either. But it's a decision for individual parents and school communities to make. And I think it's important to look at the fact that Laura referred to the Programme for Government, which no longer has that target in relation to divested schools. But we will, any of the new schools that have been established in this country are non-religious or non-denominational in terms of having a particular religious ethos.
Can I just say, I know primary school teachers, I live with primary school teachers, I didn't realise the extent to which religion is supposed to play a role in their job and how it doesn't. They're meant to teach religion every day. They're meant to give religion homework every Wednesday. I've spoken to numerous teachers who are told that that is the widespread policy every Wednesday. And while that is happening, there's a growing number of kids in their classrooms who are not of Catholic faith, who are just sitting there, who are doing nothing. And also, like, even what?
It depends on the school.
But it's the amount of people I've talked to, even my own school. I was in school less than 20 years ago. At Mass, like, the other kids used to have to sit away. It's just totally not reflective. In job interviews, you have to say, if you're a teacher, that, like, depending on the school you're going for, that you're really into religion and that you are practicing Catholic. It's completely barbaric. And I actually think that it would be far more inclusive environment
barbaric.
To teach.
Barbaric?
I think so.
Barbaric?
I don't want to. I have never had to lie about...
Regressive, maybe, but barbaric?
Well, I've never had to, pump up my religious beliefs in order to get a job, in order to feel that it would help my chances for a job. Okay. It's based on your capability, or it isn't.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Sarah McGuinness, Barry Ward, Laura Harmon and Harry McGee.